Welcome to Innovation Alberta, a celebration of science, research, and the inventive spirit. I'm Cheryl Croucher. There's good news on the oil front from the Alberta Research Council. The development of new sensors to stem the flow of lost bitumen has won the ARC and Syncrude a joint Aztec Award for Innovation. And with concerns over greenhouse gas emissions and the search for alternatives to fossil fuels, interest in biodiesel is on the rise. A new program at the Alberta Research Council will help small producers of this fuel made from canola and other crops. And the International Polar Year just got a big boost from the federal government with the announcement of $150 million towards polar research. These stories coming up in the next half hour on Innovation Alberta. Getting oil out of the oil sands in northern Alberta is a huge undertaking, and the Alberta Research Council has played an historic and pivotal role in making it happen. It was Dr. Carl Clark's team in the early 1920s that led to the process that could unlock the bitumen or oil from the sands. And now it's another team from the Alberta Research Council that has worked with Syncrude scientists to develop special sensors to improve oil sands recovery. This work will be recognized at the upcoming Aztec Award Ceremony. One person stepping up to accept that award is Pat Dugan, a scientist with Syncrude Research.
Well, first of all, bitumen, not everybody knows that that's what we call the oil part of oil sands. It's a very heavy oil, and it is bitumen. It's very thick, viscous material. But in the first step of an oil sand processing plant, that's what you want to recover. Subsequent to that, that bitumen is turned into something more like crude oil or synthetic crude. So we can put it in pipelines and pump it down south. But the bitumen is the material that's actually in the sand. And it's there in from anywhere from 5 to 20%. Typically it's around 10 to 12% of the sand is bitumen. And the major part of processing is to recover the bitumen from the sand. And obviously the more bitumen we can recover, the more efficient the process is going to be. It costs a lot of money to mine the sand, deliver it to a plant. And so if you lose even a small percentage, it has quite a high value to it. So the more you can recover, the better off the economics of the process are.
So is the lost bitumen then the stuff that you can't recover?
The lost bitumen, it's in typically the waste stream of the extraction process is tailings, which is water and sand, and it goes and it's held in large tailings pond. So the bitumen we don't recover remains with that. And it goes with the tailings to the tailings pond, and it's pretty much unrecoverable from that point on.
Now, you've teamed up with the people at the Alberta Research Council to come up with some special sensors. What was the problem that you were trying to address?
Well, the difficulty with processing oil sands is that it comes from different areas in the deposit in the mine, and not oil sand is the same. It ranges in grade. There's different amounts of bitumen in it. There are different minerals in it. And subsequently, it doesn't always process exactly the same as it's going through your processing plant. We can change temperature, we can change flow rates, we can add chemicals in different amounts to try to optimize the amount of bitumen we can recover. But to really optimize it, we have to know something about the ore that's coming in so we can set up the plant to deal with that most efficiently. Now, we take a lot of samples in the mine, so we know where the ore is and what the grade is, but typically Syncrude, for example, there are several tons of second of material coming through the plant in several processing lines, but each line is about a ton of second of material. So it's very, very difficult to know exactly how to process that because it's varying with time because it's coming from different points in the mine. If you took a sample and sent it off to the lab, by the time you analyzed it and came back, maybe an hour would have passed and that material is long gone and you're dealing with something else. So you can't really use that information to set up your process. So what we've been looking at is ways of actually characterizing the ore as it's coming by, either on a conveyor belt or the ore is mixed with water to form a slurry, or you're in a pipeline, so we can get information, very timely information, to help set up the process in the plant in order to recover it most efficiently.
What have you been doing to this point?
We've had some of these instruments in the plant for a number of years. One of the difficulties in this whole process that I described is knowing exactly how efficient you've been or what the product of that plant was like. And that's the sensor we've developed most recently, where we're able to measure in a very short period of time the recovery or the yield from the process, or how much bitumen we're actually losing. So with that information, coupled with the character of the ore coming in, that helps us determine what we should do next time we see that ore to make the process a little more efficient.
The sensors that you've developed now through the help of the Alberta Research Council, how much do they improve your situation?
We haven't really got these into full use, but we would expect, if we carry this process on, recoveries typically in the order of 1 to 3% improvement. Typically now is about a 90%, 92%, depending on the type of ore recovery. The industry as a whole is producing about 1 million barrels of oil a day. A 1 or 2% improvement makes a tremendous difference. This is ore that doesn't have to be mined. It's already mined. It's already delivered to the plant. So it's really, in times of high oil prices like today, it adds to the cash flow of the company. In times of low oil prices, it makes the whole industry more viable.
So nobody else had done this before?
There are not many people in this industry, and that's part of the problem. You can't go out and buy these sensors because there is really no market for them. It's starting to pick up now with more companies in oil sand processing. But there hasn't really been an incentive for anybody to do it. We're not inventing anything particularly new in techniques. It's a matter of packaging things in a certain way so they'll work in this environment. That's the key to it.
Well, it must be pretty good because you've received an Aztec Award for it. What does that mean to you?
Well, that's pretty nice. It's nice to see this type of work recognized because it is important work, and it's going to be more important as the industry grows. So it is nice to see that.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
That was Pat Dugan, a senior research associate at the Syncrude Research Facility. Pat's partner at the Alberta Research Council is Rod Ridley, business unit manager of the Sensors Engineering Group.
Well, our business unit, the specialty of our business unit, is developing measurement solutions for industrial processes. So what we do is we look for applications and challenges that the industry here in Alberta has in making measurements that will help them improve their processes. And this is a little bit unique in the industry because most measurements that are made are very simple ones. The plants can buy the instruments off the shelf. They're well known and used all over the world. Here in Alberta, especially in the oil sands, they have some very unique challenges when they're making measurements in their process, and they can't go buy the instrument just off the shelf. Somebody has to develop something for their custom purposes and make sure it works.
What challenges did you face when Pat came over from Syncrude and said, can you help us with these sensors?
Well, the biggest challenge, particularly dealing in oil sands, is the very harsh environment that these sensors have to survive in. We're dealing with pipelines and tanks and things full of slurries of water and oil and sand and rocks, and almost all of the off-the-shelf type instruments only last a few hours or even less in that kind of environment. So really making something that can survive the harsh environment inside the processes was the biggest challenge that we faced.
What are they like?
There's quite a variety of different sensors that go into this. What it usually turns out to be, though, is a primary measurement sensor that actually contacts the process or removes something from the process. A secondary part that processes what has been removed from the process. And then at the heart of it is usually a small embedded computer, because generally the information coming from the sensor, you can't use it directly for the measurement. You have to add some intelligence to the measurement, quite a bit of computation in many cases, to produce a final number that can be used to control your process.
Is it done by light waves? Because things are going by at such a high rate of speed.
Well, we've done a number of sensors with Syncrude, and each one of them uses different physical properties of the system to make the measurement. For instance, one of them is measuring the amount of clay that's in the slurry being pumped in the pipeline, and that sensor measures the radioactive decay of potassium inside of the clay. So it's actually measuring the radiation coming from the pipeline. We have another sensor that measures the amount of bitumen that's on the oil sand. That sensor is based on light, how much light is absorbed as it strikes the oil sand and is reflected. And then another one that measures the amount of bitumen that they lose from the process. And once again, that sensor is based on probably a technique that's similar to liquid chromatography. You could look at it that way.
So there are five sensors then that are part of this whole package. What makes them worthy of an Aztec Award?
The thing that excites me about them, and I think that makes it worthy, is not the sensors individually or even what they do for the process, but the focus that has been put on this part of the oil sand industry over a very long period of time. It isn't something that just we started a month ago and we finished and we had a big breakthrough. It's been a concerted, focused effort over quite a number of years, first by Pat over at Syncrude, and then when we joined with him by our group of people here. So the award, although Pat and I are getting the award is really a recognition of efforts by probably 30 or 40 different people over a very extended period of time.
Are there applications to other industries?
That's one of the things that sensors engineering tries to do. Once we've solved a problem that's very specific for somebody like Syncrude, we look at the technology that's being developed and look around the world and around Canada and around Alberta to see if there's a broad application that it can be used for. If we can find those types of applications, then we partner with companies here in Alberta so that they can take the technology that's being developed with our joint efforts here and turn it into a business that benefits the economy of Alberta.
Thank you very much, Rod.
You're welcome. Thanks.
That was Rod Ridley, Business Unit Manager of the Sensors Engineering Group at the Alberta Research Council. Rod and his counterpart at Syncrude, Pat Dugan, have won the Syncrude Aztec Innovation in Oil Sands Prize. With the pump price of gasoline going through the roof, there's a lot more interest these days in cheaper alternatives. And that's not to mention the benefits of reducing the environmental impacts of fossil-based fuel. So it's rather timely that the Alberta Research Council has teamed up with Natural Resources Canada to create an online biofuels quality registry. The man in charge of testing these new biofuels, and biodiesel in particular at the Alberta Research Council, is Dan Waspinski.
Biodiesel is the term used to describe fuel or diesel made from a renewable resource, such as canola oil or soybean oil or tallow or other renewable oils.
Is that on the market at this point?
Biodiesel is becoming popular. It's has a groundswell in the United States with the soybean industry, and in Canada, we are looking at using canola oil and other feedstocks to produce this new diesel, if you will.
So, how does this compare to regular diesel? How's it made?
Well, biodiesel is made through a chemical process called transesterification, and it's important to remember that you cannot just take a canola oil and blend it with diesel and use it. There is a chemical reaction that happens to make it more suitable for burning in a diesel engine.
Do you have to blend it with diesel, or can you have it straight up?
There are users that use biodiesel called B100, which would be 100% biodiesel, but the majority of the use is by blending it with normal petroleum diesel in, say, 5 to 20%.
Who's using it now?
Right now, there are demonstrations for fleets. I think the most applicable application for it would be for bus fleets or for ferries or for someone that has control over their fuel and their fleets so that they can manage some of the unique properties of the blends.
The Alberta Research Council has now entered into a partnership with the Natural Resources Canada to do some testing. Could you tell me what this program is about?
That program is through the climate change plan, something called the Biodiesel Initiative, and that is a program from the federal government and NRCan that is designed to promote the use of biofuels and in this case, biodiesel in particular. So the things they're trying to do are to educate the public on the use of biodiesel, make people more aware of the benefits of using biodiesel, and to find ways to improve the quality of the production, because it is a fledgling industry, and there are many small producers interested in using biodiesel. It's very important for them to get the quality of that fuel right, so that it can grow the industry. So that's where my laboratory comes in. We are, as I said, in partnership with NRCan, where a small producer can submit a sample to us, and we do a specification test on it to ensure that the quality of that product meets ASTM specifications. So that's very important to the industry right now, is to get a quality product.
How do you actually do the testing?
Well, my laboratory has been testing normal petroleum products for over 65 years, and we are experts in fuel specification compliance for things like diesels, gasolines, and flight fuels. And so it was a natural fit when biodiesel came along, because some of the same tests that are applied to diesel are applied to the biodiesel as well. So that's where we came in. Our producers go to the website. We've set up a special website for that. It's called biofuels.arc.ab.ca. They make an application there, and we look at the application, approve the application. The producer submits a sample to us, and it takes about 5 days to perform all the specification tests, and then we issue a certificate of analysis.
So when you do the actual testing, is it like a litmus test, or do you have to run it through a number of different machines? So what exactly happens?
There are set out in ASTM D6751 are the list of tests, and one of them is, say, a cetane test, where we run it on an engine to assess its combustion properties. There's acidity test to make sure that the biodiesel is not corrosive. There are boiling point distribution tests. There are viscosity tests. There are a whole battery of tests that we go through to ensure that the product meets specification. And the specification has been worked on through, as I said, ASTM, and who wrote a specification for B100. And that process is designed from input from producers and users of the fuel, and from engine manufacturers, to ensure that the product meets performance criteria.
Now, you said that it costs a few hundred dollars, like over $1,000, to do one of these tests. Is there some sort of subsidy that's been put in place in order to cover the cost of this?
That's where the NRCan comes in the federal government, to promote the use of biodiesel and to help these producers. They do subsidize the testing up to 70%.
Now, these tests are geared towards improving the quality assurance of biodiesel, but are there any other technical issues that still need to be solved?
Well, there's some technical and marketplace challenges, I guess, in that some of the technical stuff is getting a standardized fuel quality, which is what this program is helping, ensuring that there are the right fuel specifications. We work through the Canadian General Standards Board to write these specifications to protect the user. And some of the technical issues are that still need to be worked on are the stability of the biodiesel and its blends, some of the cold flow properties, for instance, and just the handling and distribution and the blending of the fuel. So therefore, the application or the immediate future is for fleets that can manage and control the distribution and the handling of the biodiesel, the mixing of it for use in their particular application or their demonstration or their fleet.
The price of fuel is getting pretty expensive now. What do you see as being the potential for biodiesels?
I see a lot of interest from many producers across Canada that want to utilize this service to ensure the quality of their product. I see a lot of growth in the industry and many more interested parties starting to produce biodiesel from many different feedstocks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Dan Waspinski, Business Unit Manager for the Fuels and Lubricants Group at the Alberta Research Council. It's been half a century since the last International Polar Year. The next one is scheduled for 2007, and Canada will join over 100 countries to participate in important scientific research. And of course, none of that comes cheap. Recently, dignitaries from the Arctic and the University of Alberta gathered at the Faculty Club to hear what the federal government would contribute to this undertaking. The bearer of good news was the Honourable Anne McClellan, the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada.
Although we know relatively little about the Arctic and Antarctic, existing research has shown that these polar regions have a unique relationship with the rest of the Earth. Scientists believe that the regions around the poles will experience some of the most dramatic effects of climate change that will inevitably be felt by the rest of the planet. Melting sea ice and shrinking Arctic habitats, for instance, are seen as early warnings of changes in other regions of the world. But just how significant are these changes? How rapidly do they occur? And how can we prevent any potentially devastating consequences? International Polar Year research will help us answer these and dozens of other urgent questions. The significance of polar research to the health and well-being of Northerners also cannot be overstated. But the sheer scope and complexity of relevant issues, along with the significant difficulties associated with conducting studies in remote and harsh environments, make polar research an expensive and, dare I say, even daunting challenge. The research season is short in the polar regions. The challenges involved in securing the necessary specialized research equipment, facilities, and transportation, and in acquiring adequate stocks of essential material like food and fuel, mean that planning and preparation for research in these areas must take place well in advance. Today, I am pleased to announce that the Government of Canada will invest $150 million will invest $150 million to participate in International Polar Year. I am convinced that this investment will generate substantial benefits, not only for Canadians, but also for citizens of all countries. Thank you very much.
That was the Honourable Anne McClellan, Canada's Deputy Prime Minister. The person who lobbied hard for that $150 million was Dr. David Hick. David is a professor of Northern Ecology at the University of Alberta, and he's executive director of Canada's International Polar Year Secretariat.
Everyone in this country, pretty much everyone, agrees the North is a really important region that has been neglected in some ways, and that the issues around climate change and contaminants, social issues, the international interest in the North, economic development opportunities, all of these things make it a very easy sell. But research, as you know, is sometimes more difficult to find funds for, and we've just brought together those two interests, the interest in the North and Northern Canada and the recognition that Canada is a northern country, a polar country, and this need to support whatever decisions we make in the future with sound knowledge, and science and research contributes to that.
Is the $150 million enough, or do you have to get more money from elsewhere?
Well, $150 million more than doubles what the federal government expends right now. And remember, these are funds that will be available to everyone, all Canadians, so it's not just for federal programs. It will make a big difference. But what we still know is will be required is an investment in infrastructure. So things like icebreakers, things like research stations, things like enhanced telecommunications in the North. And we can go back when we know specifically what will be required. I think it would be unfair to have expected a blank check for everything, but clearly the momentum is there now, and yeah, we'll come back and make requests for the things that need to be put in place so we can be successful, not just for IPY, but over the next decades.
What's up on the agenda then? How will this, when does this money start getting spent?
Well, the funds themselves will flow next fiscal year. So we have other sources of funding that have been made available from a number of federal departments and agencies that support the planning aspects of IPY, which are substantial and will only increase. And so we will continue to do that. We'll continue to build the research teams, develop the proposal process, work with our partners in the north and across the country and internationally so that come April 1st, we'll be ready to go.
Are you still accepting proposals for research projects?
We are continuing to accept proposals for research projects from all interested individuals and groups. It's important that they plug themselves into what already has been developed, and all of this is publicly available. We're trying to keep this process as transparent and open as possible. They can look at the Secretariat website, the Canadian IPY portal, and see what is already in development. But we don't expect to close that process for some time, and we expect that this announcement may generate a bit of interest, new interest as well.
You said that you'd like to see every year be polar year.
Well, I think the issues in the Arctic and in the polar regions that affect the entire planet, melting sea ice, the rapid warming, are issues that, I mean, there are 100 countries involved in IPY, and not all of them are polar, that's for sure. So I think there's a recognition in the world that the polar regions are an important barometer of change on our planet. And so we will need, on an ongoing basis, a need to monitor and study these things, know what the changes are, prepare and adapt for a warmer climate. So we call this the International Polar Year, and it's an event that occurred 50 years ago, but I think we'll be ramping up and training new researchers and building capacity so that we can keep this work on an ongoing basis.
Congratulations, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl.
That was Dr. David Hick, Professor of Northern Ecology at the University of Alberta and the Executive Director of Canada's International Polar Year Secretariat. That brings Innovation Alberta to a close for this week. The interviews you heard during this program are posted as audio files and as written transcripts on our website at innovationalberta.com. And you can keep up to date on technology and research events by subscribing to our weekly newsletter, Innovation Alberta Online. Innovation Alberta is sponsored by the Alberta Research Council, the University of Lethbridge, Alberta Ingenuity, the Sustainable Forest Management Network, Calgary Technologies, Inc., ICOR, the Informatics Circle of Research Excellence, the Alberta Conservation Association, Japan Canada Oil Sands Limited, Science Alberta Foundation, Ducks Unlimited Canada, Alberta Innovation and Science, the Alberta Gaming Research Institute, and the NSERC ACR Integrated Landscape Management Research Chair. Innovation Alberta is mixed at Riverdale Recorders and is a Porcupine Stone production. I'm Cheryl Croucher.